Hello everyone, this week it's Parshas Vayigash, and we're going to continue talking about Hilchos Brachos. Now, the past weeks, we were dealing with the halachas of Passover Bava Kisnin and washing and pizza and all that. I want to take, even though we haven't totally finished with that, I want to take a little break from that. Maybe we'll come back to that and review it quickly and just finish it up, but for now, I wanted to move on to the halachas of Shinui Makim, which is a very, very important part of Hilchos Brachos, and it's also sometimes a little confusing exactly to get the rules down pat. So I want to talk about that. So the halachas of Shinui Makim are basically the halacha of when you change your place. Literally, Shinui Makim means changing your place. And we'll discuss how changing your place affects your bracha, how it affects brachas. The basic concept over here that we have to know is that a bracha is valid as long as you're in the middle of eating. Once you're finished eating, then the bracha is done. Now, this is before we even talk about Shinui Makim. This is an important thing to realize, which is the concept of Hesach Hadas. Hesach Hadas means making the decision to finish with your meal, abandoning the meal, perhaps we can call it. The concept is that if you make a bracha on an apple, you make a hike, you're not in the middle of a meal, you're just taking a snack in the middle of the day. All you want to eat is that apple. You didn't have any plan of eating anything else. So you ate the apple, you finished the apple, even if you haven't made a bar nefashis yet, you're done. And you weren't planning on eating anything more. At that point, you did a hesach hadas. You totally were done with your eating, and as a result, the bracha then is no longer existent. And were you then to change your mind and say, oh, you know what, maybe I should eat another apple, so then you need to make a new bracha. Now, I just gave a very nice, clear, easy case where you very clearly changed your mind, you were not going to eat anything else, and you changed your mind, you're going to eat something else. And we all know that 99% of the time, that's not exactly how it happens. It's more like you're not thinking at all, or you're not sure, or maybe you will eat more. And, you know, it's true in those cases. It's not clear whether there will be a Hesach Hadas or not. But let's just talk, even in a case where you really, really did a Hesach Hadas, you finished eating, totally finished eating, you said you're not going to eat anymore, and then you change your mind, you need to make a new bracha. Hesach Hadas, it equals the end of your meal, which equals the end of your bracha. Chazal determined, I guess, that there is a different type of Hesach Hadas, and that's called changing one's place. Changing one's place of eating, in the eyes of Chazal, was an automatic end of a meal. People don't leave when they're in the middle of eating, they don't walk outside when they're in the middle of eating, and therefore they equated leaving with an automatic Hesach Hadas, and that's regardless of what you're thinking, they didn't care. Regardless of what you're thinking, if you did something which is called a Shinui Makim, if you successfully changed your place, it's an automatic end to your meal. It's an automatic cutoff, and therefore it will require you to make a new bracha. So that being the case, once we determine what's called a Shinui Makim, it won't make a difference if you have a mind to leave. It won't make a difference if you're carrying food. It doesn't make a difference if you're just leaving for a second. None of those things make a difference. So let's first talk about something that is for sure a Shinui Makim. Something that's for sure a Shinui Makim would be like this. Let's say you were in your house and you took a glass of water or a glass of orange juice and you made a shahakal on it. You drank part of that glass of orange juice and then you just needed to go out the front door because your kids were coming from carpool, so you needed to go to get them from the car. So you went out, left the glass of orange juice on your counter, went outside to the street, got your child, and came back inside. That, according to all opinions, no matter how you want to cut it, that will be considered a Shinui Makim. The type of thing you were drinking was a shahakal. It was orange juice. It's something which Shinui Makim definitely affects it, and the type of Shinui Makim you made was you went out of your house. Leaving your house to go to the street is most definitely Shinui Makim, according to all opinions. So when we have this combination of the type of food, which is the shahakal, together with going outside, that's a full-fledged shinim makom. And when you go back inside, you will need to make a new bracha. Again, the understanding is that by leaving your house, you ended that drinking, that meal, so to speak, of drinking orange juice. It ended. And that was even though you only left for a minute. You just wanted to get your child. You knew you were in the middle of drinking orange juice. You didn't forget about the cup of orange juice. You would have preferred to finish it. But you had to run out. It won't even help if you're carrying the orange juice with you outside. It won't help if when you made the bracha on the orange juice, you realize that your child might be coming any minute, and you said, okay, you know, in case it comes, I'm going to run outside. None of those things help. The fact that you left your house is a shinim makom, and being that it's a shinim makom, it's a hesach hadas, and you need to make a new bracha when you come back inside. So that's a clear definition of what shinim makom is, when it applies, and how nothing affects it. It's going to always break your bracha and require you to make a new bracha. So what we do need to explain, and this is where you have to remember a couple of rules, is both sides of the equation. In other words, every time you change your place, does that require a new bracha? There's a lot of different possibilities. There's going outside onto the street. That's the most extreme. What about going from upstairs to downstairs or downstairs to upstairs? What about walking to your backyard, which is surrounded by a gate, onto your porch? Walking into a neighbor's apartment if you're in an apartment building. A lot of different possibilities, and we're going to have to figure out what the rule is, when is something equivalent to going outside. Outside will be our gold standard. If you go outside onto the street, that's for sure a shinim makom. That's our gold standard, and now we just have to see what can be compared to that. The other question will be, are all foods affected by shinim makom? And here is an interesting thing. The svara over here is as follows. The reasoning behind this is like this. There are some foods which have a very interesting halacha when it comes to bracha achreina. When you eat, anytime a person eats, ideally, you're supposed to make the bracha achreina before you do anything, right? You finished eating, you know you're not eating anymore, you're really supposed to make the bracha achreina right then where you are. A good idea because, as we all know, you know, otherwise we're most likely to forget to make the bracha achreina, or we're going to make the bracha achreina two or three times. So one or the other is going to happen. So the best thing is to do it right away, and this way, you know, that's what you always do, and you can always assume you made the bracha achreina. It's the best thing. But what happens if, for whatever reason, it didn't work, and now you're somewhere else? Do you need to go back to your original place to make the bracha achreina? So it depends on what type of bracha achreina you need to make. If what you need to do is to bench, you have to say berachas hamazon, you ate bread. Or what you need to do is you have to make an alam michya because you ate mezainis or you ate peres. That type of a bracha achreina requires that you go back to your original place to make the bracha achreina. That's what it requires. There are exceptions, like when things, you know, you got on the train and you're halfway to Washington, so that you did that by mistake, so you can make the bracha where you are. You're not required to get off and take the other train. You know, that whenever you totally left your place by mistake, you don't have to. But essentially, ideally, what a person really should do is go back. And that these type of brachas require you to go back. Other bracha chaynas do not require you to go back. If all you did was drink water, you drank orange juice, and you need to make a bar nefasha, so you ate. I have an apple, and all you need to make is a bar nefashas. If the bracha achreina that you need to make is bar nefashas, you do not have to go back. You should make the bracha before you do anything else. But if you did leave, and even if you left deliberately, you can make the bracha wherever it is that you remember. So being that there's a difference between what the bracha achreina requires you to do, when you eat food that requires you to go back and make a bracha achreina, Chazal say, so then you never really ended your meal, even though you left, because you have to go back. So since you have to go back, the fact that you left doesn't really change the situation. That's the reasoning of it. So again, to summarize, if the gold standard is you drank orange juice and you went outside to the street, there the food is a type of food that can have shinim makom. The change of place is a type of change of place that is considered a shinim makom, and that's going to require you to make a new bracha shahakal when you come back inside, regardless of what you had in mind, what you were doing, carrying it in your hand, leaving for a moment. None of those things make a difference. What we are going to have to, in Yirtzeh Hashem, next week, go into is what other places are included and are equivalent to going out into the streets, and what foods are equivalent to orange juice. And as we explained, there are some foods that aren't equivalent because those foods require you to go back to your original place to make the bracha achrayna. Therefore, it's as if you're still there. It's as if you didn't leave and you didn't break up your meal by going to a new place. This week's parsha, Parshas Vayigash, is effectively the culmination of the story that's been going on in the past couple of weeks between Yosef and the rest of the Shvatim. And a recap is what happened last week. Yosef was the king of Mitzrayim, the Mishnah Lamelech, and when the brothers finally came the first time, he made it as recognize them, and he wants them to go back and get Binyamin, and then they go back, they do get Binyamin, and when he sees Binyamin, he cries, and he says, Alkim Yachnecha B'ni. That would be the first time he cries. Then he makes a deliberate scheme to trap them, and he hides his kais, his becher, in the sack of Binyamin, and they come back again, and they try to, Yehuda is ready to offer himself up instead of Binyamin. And then finally, Yosef reveals himself to his brothers, and he cries again. Second time he cries. And then he tells them who he is, he tells them the whole story, they're stunned. And then he speaks to Binyamin finally, explaining who he is. And again it says, he cried the third time. He cried on Binyamin's shoulders, and Binyamin cried on his shoulders. And then again it says, he kissed all his brothers, and he cried. Alehem. A fourth time. Then it says, when Yaakov Avinu finally came, he cried. Yosef cried again. That would be a fifth time. And then at the end of next week's parasha, in Vayechi, after Yaakov Avinu is Nifter, and it says that the brothers were worried that at that point Yosef would take revenge upon them to pay them back for what they did, Yosef cried once again, telling them that he had no such plan, and this is what Hashem wanted. And again, there's crying. So no less than six times do we find the Torah tells us how Yosef cried. And it's a fascinating thing because you don't really see it by any of the other Avos. And you don't really see it in the Torah all that much. It seems to be very specific to Yosef. Yaakov Avinu also didn't see Yitzchak for 22 years when he was in Lavan. And he came back to his parents 22 years later. And it doesn't say, it doesn't talk about the meeting at all, actually. It doesn't say that when he met Yitzchak, he cried. He might have. But it doesn't talk about it. For some reason here, there is a big emphasis on this crying. And it needs an explanation. Hashem Shem Pinkus has a beautiful and a very deep explanation of this. And I guess I'll try to give over whatever I can give over in this amount of time. But there's a lot to think about. And he starts with a story. It's a story that is attributed to the Ramah, who, you know, wrote the Shulchan Aruch together with the Beis Yosef, and he has another sefer on Hashkafa, or Kabbalah, really. It's called Teres Ayla. And somewhere in that sefer, he says the following story, which is a very interesting story. Apparently, when the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so Yirmiyahu HaNavi was outside Yerushalayim and crying over the destruction. And he encountered one of the Greek philosophers, possibly Plato, perhaps a different one. Exactly, the timing is hard to place. But it says he encountered Plato. And Plato asked him, Yirmiyahu HaNavi, you're such a wise man, why are you crying over spilled milk, so to speak? It's gone, it's burnt, it's done. What's the point of crying about it? Look forward, look ahead, start building, start rebuilding. Pull yourself together. What's the point of crying? So Yirmiyahu HaNavi challenged Plato, and he said, Plato, you're a philosopher, you undoubtedly have many questions in philosophy. Ask me anything that you haven't been able to solve. So Plato then went on to ask him all sorts of questions which he had not found any solution to, and Yirmiyahu answered them, like the expression goes, kolachayad, without even trying. Plato was stunned. He couldn't believe that such wisdom was possible in a human being. He said, you must be a malach, you must be an angel. Yirmiyahu HaNavi said, no. He said, the wisdom came from these stones and bricks that you're asking me, why am I crying about them? And the Ramah adds that Yirmiyahu HaNavi told Plato, truth is, you as a philosopher don't have the capability to understand why I'm crying. And that was the end of the discussion. So what does this mean? Why would he not understand as a philosopher? What was it that he couldn't understand? So Rav Shimshon Pinchas explains as follows. He says that Yosef HaTzadik has a very unique name, Yosef HaTzadik. We call him a Tzadik. Why is he called a Tzadik? Not everybody was called that. Not every person in Tanakh was zeichah to get that added on to his name. He says that, he quotes from Kabbalah sources as well, that Yosef is the Midah of Yesod. And without getting into all of his sources, what he says is that the Midah of Yosef was to connect Shemayim Va'aretz. A Tzadik is someone who has the ability to connect us, who is down here, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is up there in Shemayim, and technically so far away from us, and so different than us, and so unrelatable. And a Tzadik has the ability to make that connection. So Rav Shimshon Pinchas explains, how does he have the ability to make that connection? The way a tzaddik is able to make that connection, he says, is through love, through ahava. How is it possible, he says, for someone, he says, like the Chafetz Chaim, a Goyin, a brilliant, brilliant Talmud Chacham, knew Kol HaShas, knew all the Svarim, wrote the Mishnah Berurah, and he has a little son that's 4 years old, and he sits down and he learns with him. How does he connect to him? How can the Chafetz Chaim, someone of that stature, how is he able to connect to his little son? What connection could they possibly have? They're light years away from each other. The connection is the bond of love. A tzaddik has the ability to bring out our love for Hashem, and he has the ability to show us how Hashem loved us. In that way, he connects Shemayim Va'aretz. There's a very interesting fact. If you'll search online, you'll see that crying is a very uniquely human attribute. No other creature on this world cries. It's just us. There are animals that cry out in pain when they're hurting physically, but to cry as a means of expression is something which is only human. And interestingly, if you read, the evolutionists have a very hard time explaining why a human being would have such a physical attribute. It's very strange to them. It doesn't really fit into anything. They say the strangest theories to explain it. A human being has the ability to love, and has the ability to love that which was outside of himself. And we can express love in a lot of physical ways. We can hug someone, we can kiss someone, we can kiss our children. And that's a physical way of expressing love and of expressing emotion. But when you take away any physical form of expressing emotion, if a person wants to express what's deep, deep and within his heart, whether he's very sad or whether he's very happy, the strongest form of expression is crying. That's how you express that love that's in your heart. When love is missing, a person cries. When a love is very powerful, a chasana, a simcha, a person cries. Without using any physical touch, that's how you express it. That's how we express it. When Yosef was faced with his brothers, Yosef was trying to put together something that was very broken. There was a tremendous lack of unity among the Shvatim. And this, Yosef understood, as we all understand, as Yosef, as a Navi, saw, that this was ultimately going to lead to the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash. It says that when Yosef cried on Binyamin's shoulder and Binyamin cried on Yosef's shoulder, he cried on the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash was built in Binyamin's portion of Eretz Yisrael. Mishkan Shiloh was built in Yosef's portion of Eretz Yisrael. They were both destroyed. That's what they cried about. This wasn't just a futuristic cry. They were crying about something which was happening right then. The bond wasn't complete. The unity didn't take place. there was something missing, and they were trying to bring it out. They were trying to reconnect through crying. And in the end of next week's parasha as well, Yosef was trying to make that connection real again, to make that connection whole through crying. That's why the Torah stresses it so much, how much Yosef was doing everything in his power to reforge the bond in between the Shvatim. And that's why he cried at that point with Binyamin, because he realized that it wasn't perfect. And he cried at the ultimate destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan Shiloh that would result as the would be a result of the lack of this lack of unity. So that's why it's specific to Yosef, someone who was in his power to bring out the Ahava, to bring the unity between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and ultimately between ourselves. And he was doing the best and the utmost he could to make that happen. And that's why his expression specifically was crying. Have a good night and a good Shabbos.